You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest, Rich Waltz. You can find him on CBS. Last night he was on the Boise State basketball game and doing play-by-play for CBS Sports and CBS Sports Network. He also does some MLB stuff, and I want to talk a little bit about the basketball game last night at Boise State and a whole bunch about what Rich sees up and down the West Coast as he is calling basketball games, and he's joining us now, and pop him on. There you go. Rich, how you doing, man? You made it home.
Hey, buddy, so did you, apparently. And yes. I have to say, you look nothing like the avatar on your newsletter. So,
well, thank you.
Because we ran into each other in Boise while you were on your tour of Broncoland. So,
that's right.
It was a fun night. Look, I get a chance with CBS to call a good number of Mountain West games with my buddy, who's a Portland area guy, Dan Dickow, a lot. And it feels like the last couple of years, every game I do in the Mountain West, is there's high stakes and a huge crowd and just drama and fun. And then last night was no different with Richard Pitino in New Mexico and Boise State.
Give me an idea, because, you know, we're creeping up 8 days away from March, and we'll get conference tournaments. And do you, this time of year, you kind of can feel like, you know, some of the coaches who've been around a while are firming up those rotations and maybe trying some new things. I think Boise State last night started a freshman for the first time, and it worked out well for them. But what do you see happening this time of year in college basketball?
Yeah, it's a good point. You coaches do start to distill rotations, and if things aren't going well, coaches start to make changes. And I think Leon Rice did that last night with Pearson Carmichael, the kid from Bend, Oregon, we talked to him before the game yesterday, and he said, "Yeah, my mom named me Peanut when I was, you know, born, because it kind of was the shape of my head, and they shortened it to Nut, but they've brought the Peanut back at Boise State." He changed the whole dynamic of that team. The Boise State, Tyson Dagenhart, Alvaro Cardenas, the point guard. Those are two really, really good college players, but they've been searching for that outside shooter, and they lost two of them last year. Max Rice, Leon's son, was an excellent three-point shooter, and Chibuzo Abo went to USC. Max is playing in Australia now. So they didn't really have that score to complement a great pick-and-roll game with a big and a dynamite point guard. And Carmichael, he's a kid that they were going to redshirt him, but he tore it up in practice. They pulled his red shirt. He got his first start. I think he went for like 21 last night, and it changed the whole dynamic of their offense, because New Mexico is an outstanding defensive team. They really pry the ball from you. They're one of the best stealing teams in the West. And all of a sudden, they couldn't double Cardenas and Dagenhart when all that was going on, and Carmichael scorched them for threes. So, you see that, and I think Gonzaga, Mark Few went through some of that too when they lost a couple of games. And when that happens in Spokane, it's like, the sky is falling. When it's pick any flagship franchise in any sport, when the Yankees aren't going well, when the Patriots started to tilt to the left, it's like the sky is falling. And Gonzaga lost a couple of games, and he tightened his rotation. He changed some of his starting guys and the way he gives minutes out, and it feels like Gonzaga's back where they should be.
What do you make of the Mountain West and WCC? You get to see a lot of them, but are there teams in there that you think in the next week or so really can position themselves to be tournament teams, or do you already have in your mind kind of who the tournament teams are from those conferences?
No, I that's a good question. I think in the West Coast Conference, Santa Clara is one of those teams. They're 55 in the net. I have them at home Tuesday night against Gonzaga. They beat Gonzaga up there. That's when the sky really was falling for Bulldog fans. So Santa Clara has another shot at Gonzaga. It's a quad one opportunity. I think Santa Clara is due. It's been a long, long time, Steve Nash type time, before they've been. Herb Sendek has been really close there. San Francisco is the other really good team in that conference. They're, you know, both of those schools, if they can get quality wins, you know, one of the things that conference kind of adjusted their tournament, giving the first two teams a double bye into the semifinals. And I think sometimes that's great because they were trying to protect that second team to get in the NCAA tournament. St. Mary's is past that, needing help, right? They're going. Gonzaga's going. You want Santa Clara and San Francisco to have an opportunity to go. Oregon State sitting at 77 right now. I have them next Saturday at St. Mary's. Much improved this year. Fun team. The game against Gonzaga that I had was just one of the best college games and atmospheres that I've had in two or three years. So I go Santa Clara, San Francisco there. If you're going Mountain West, I think Boise State with that win last night all of a sudden was like, oh, these guys are better than they're playing. They got Utah State and Colorado State coming to their place. The Mountain West tournament is always great, and they'll have more opportunities against Quad 1 and Quad 2 teams. San Diego State, Utah State, New Mexico are right now in all the models in the Mountain West. St. Mary's, Gonzaga, and the West Coast Conference. And it's, you know, it's kind of weird, too, and I'm sure you've had the same deal, continually measuring the Oregon, UCLA, USC, Washington in Big Ten terms, not with it, those other groups of teams. But I don't see, of those four, anybody but UCLA and Oregon getting in at USC's. And Washington, to me, are a little too far away.
I am talking with Rich Waltz, CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network, and give me an idea. I mean, you've seen so many games, Rich, and people say this to me. I look at football games, and I'm still interested. I still love it. But what do you love about calling these games and being around college sports?
It's just totally different. I mean, I get a chance to call Major League Baseball, and I have for a long time, and I love that. But when you're comparing college football to NFL, there's just something different about the electricity in the stadium, the buildup, the week, being on campus, all of that. I think a good way, and again, I'm fortunate because I get to go and see great venues. And, you know, we've had some CBS on CBS Sports Network and on CBS this year. I've been able to go to the Big 12 and see some of those arenas. And I worked in the SEC and the ACC when I was down in Florida for 13 years as well. It's just different. The other night I was watching an NBA game, and it was third quarter, and it was a close game. And, you know, when you're watching the game, you can see, like, the first six, seven rows of stands and stuff. Fans just were sitting and watching and having a cocktail. There really wasn't a whole lot of emotion in the arena. And that's such a contrast to a good college basketball game that has fans and has, you know, something on the line. You get it at a lot of places. And the Mountain West in particular, and I think nationally, is undervalued. You ask guys like Richard Pitino that coached in other places and arrived in the league, and they'll say it's just unbelievable venues and home court advantages. I know that you're making your tour of that conference. I would recommend you get to Utah State to see a basketball game before the year's out. That is one of the hardest places to play. The fans are so close to the court. There's 10,000 of them. That student section is dynamite. Or get to San Diego State and go to Viejas, where there's 12,000 every night. The fans, again, are right on top. The show, the student section there is dynamite as well. You got to go to the Pit and see what's happening there. With, you know, Patino's been outstanding there, getting that going. Got to the tournament last year. Is going to go this year. That's 14,000 or 15,000, and obviously the fans with that setup are right down on top of you. Boise State can be a hornet's nest. Colorado State can be a hornet's nest. And again, I was stunned and just blown away by the Oregon State stuff. That Gonzaga game was just back and forth. when a game is like that and you have a crowd, and that was the first sellout, I think, in like 4 or 5 years, and it was just big shot after big shot down the stretch and big shot in the last minute by both teams. You get to overtime, and I guess it was Rattay that had the great that great overtime period. You just walk out of there, and it's a completely different experience than going to an NBA game. And in college football, the same. You know, sometimes when you go to an NFL game and watch it live, the thing that stands out is the downtime and all the commercials, and there just doesn't feel like there's much going on in the stadium in those 90 seconds. In college, the band is playing, there's cheerleaders jumping, there's stuff happening, and it's just different. And that I enjoy that. I was a college athlete. I was I would not have collected much NIL. I was a college baseball player. So, but I'm telling you, the college atmosphere to me is just more fun.
We're talking to Rich Waltz, CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network. He's also called MLB games as well. Rich, the Pac-12, as you mentioned, is, you know, mentioned some of those venues and some of those teams, is putting together a really good basketball conference as you look at it. And I have to ask you, like, you know, St. Mary's, does St. Mary's belong in this conversation if you and I are assembling candidates for Pac-12 basketball programs that could be added? Or does that gym present a problem, the gym size? You've been there, you've called games there. Tell me if they fit.
You know, on paper, I think so, and I think they're a, you know, they should have built a statue of Randy Bennett 20 years ago and put it on the entrance to the campus, because he just, the, you know, by his will and his ability to recruit in Australia and bring European players in, that's the secret sauce at St. Mary's. He puts guys in the NBA. You know, on paper, yeah. And I, from what I've heard, there's a movement afoot to whether they stay in the West Coast Conference or go anywhere else to enlarge that gym, essentially what it is. And I grew up 20 minutes from there, so I went to, as a kid, to go see games there. You know, and that's a, you know, they're a great model for what I think Wayne Tinkle's doing right now, which is, if you can't compete with NIL, with major college conferences and programs, dot your lineup and your roster with European players or foreign players who aren't able to get the same type of NIL deals in the United States. They can go back home in the summer and make some money there. But the European players are generally a lot more loyal and happy just to be in the States and playing. And if you can't waive, if an SEC team can't waive $2 million at a player, that guy is gonna stay. So that's kind of how St. Mary's has done it. It's hard to say what's gonna fit and what's not gonna fit in any league right now, right? I mean, ask Grand Canyon what league they fit in, because they jumped to one and said, yeah, we're so happy to be here, and then a month later it's like they jumped to the next.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know what fits. I know that the conferences that are creative, whether it's the Mountain West and what they're doing and what, you know, the Pac-12 did, certainly with Gonzaga being coming in without football. I think, you know, finding the niche and being creative is kind of the will rule the day, so to speak, when the dust settles. And then, who knows? I mean, the dust could settle in 2 years, and then when another TV contract window comes open in 30 or whatever, then it's back, it's game on again. So, but to answer your question, I think basketball-wise, on paper, on the floor, they would fit in any conference right now.
Rich, you've got a great story. People who don't know, grew up in the East Bay in California, in Martinez, and then Los Medanos College. I'm familiar there. I played in that same conference, community college conference.
Wait a minute. Where did you play?
I was at De Anza and Gavilan, both. And so I saw a little Los Medanos. So, and
we played De Anza. Yeah,
you were at UC Davis, and I was at Chico State, and we're years apart, but we both played baseball. But give me, like, I always tell kids that are in these college classes that I speak to, like, I was not a kid who had it figured out, and I ended up going to community college, and I'm glad that I did it. And give me, like, you know, for you, what were those moments for you? Maybe, you know, where did you get your best training for real life?
Well, every success that I've had as a broadcaster, I certainly look back and say it was as a college athlete and a high school athlete, too. I played three sports at Alhambra High School in Martinez. I was, you know, a diminutive wide receiver and a 5'8" point guard. But in baseball, I was a middle infielder, and I really wanted to play college baseball. And I wasn't, when I got out of high school, I really wasn't there yet. So there were two high-level junior colleges near me, DVC, Diablo Valley College, yep, and Los Medanos. And Los Medanos, the DVC coach said, yeah, you wouldn't play here. The Los Medanos coach said, well, come on in and you know, happily would beat the DVC team a few times. But what junior college gave me at the age of 18 or 19 was the ability to get in a weight room and get high-level instruction in terms of hitting, strengths. And by the time I was middle of my freshman year, I was in the starting lineup. And then my sophomore year, I had a great summer league, and all of a sudden I could hit. You know, I had put on 15 pounds. I had, you know, a coach that really knew more about hitting than any of my high school coaches did. And that got me to UC Davis, and I was fortunate to start there for 2 years, and we won the league. We brawled with Chico, by the way.
Yeah,
infamously,
those are battles.
On what was it? Pioneer Days up at Chico, which was a fancy name for a drunken week of partying in Chico, California. I will tell you that, and it was on Pioneer Day, the last day of the festival, that we had the infamous brawl there. But anyways, what it taught me was failure, getting back up, dusting yourself off, problem solving. If you weren't in the lineup or you weren't doing, you know, if you weren't hitting where you wanted to hit, you go to your coach and find out why. And the great lesson was give the coach what he's looking for and you'll play. Give the coach what he's looking for. And my dad told me that when I was 12, when I was, you know, bitching about I wasn't getting the ball or they weren't, you know, I wasn't in the starting lineup. And my dad pitched at Cal, and it's one of the great lessons he taught me. He looked at me and he said, look, don't complain to me. Go talk to your coach. He'll tell you why you're not in the leadoff spot. He'll tell you why they're not getting you the ball. And then fix it. And then you'll get the ball. Then you'll be hitting leadoff. And it was a great lesson. And I didn't walk in at junior college as a starter and became one. I didn't walk into UC Davis as a starter and became one. And I credit all of that to the ability to problem solve, take a critical look at yourself. What do I lack and how do I get those things? And that's for my broadcasting career. I started in the minor leagues in Spokane and 6-7 years in the minor leagues, small college and minor league hockey as well, and then, you know, Prime Sports Northwest, Mariners, ESPN, and I've been really fortunate. A lot of good people have helped push me forward. So
you do a hell of a job, and I love what you just said, because, you know, when the broadcast ends, I always go back and I'm like, what could I have done different? What would I have done better? I'm reading my column from this morning on the commercial break going, gosh, you know, fourth paragraph, should I have added this? You know, you have to have that honesty with yourself, to that ability to self-scout or self-evaluate, don't you?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And you have to almost welcome that. And the thing, when I became a broadcaster, I didn't go to broadcasting school. I was pre-law. But I realized when I got there that the only way I was going to move up was just get better. And I found a few people that I really trusted in the industry. One of them was a really talented guy. He's just a terrific, was terrific to me, Ted Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
And you would send him stuff, and he would tell you, this is good, this sucks. Mm-hmm. And so you realize right away, you want to hear what you do well, and this is whether you're an athlete, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a radio talk show host, whether you're a writer like yourself, or all the things that you do. you want to know what you do well so you don't change it, but you also want to know what you need to improve on so you can work on that thing. And that was the beauty for me of climbing through the minor leagues, was you had 145 opportunities each summer to get better. You had, if you're doing hockey, you had 80 games to get better, and you could work on it almost on a nightly basis. And, you know, you master something, you move on to the next. And you don't worry. The other great lesson from sports to me was a high school coach pulled me aside one time, and he said, "Hey, how many gloves do you have?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "How many gloves do you have?" I said, "I got one." And he said, "Yeah, you got one." And he says, I see you out there worrying about everybody else around you. The third baseman isn't doing his job at second base. He says, until you're the best freaking shortstop in the Bay Area, don't worry about anybody else. Worry about yourself and what you can control." And that, I still lean on that a lot today. That piece of advice when I was 17 years old was just gold, right? I mean, there's so much we can't control in this industry, because there's politics, and it's, you know, it's nuance and it's subjective, and you can like chocolate, I can like strawberry when we walk into Baskin Robbins, just like if you turn on a game, but you can't control that you're prepared, that you've worked on things, and that's all it is. You control what you control. Coaches talk about it in athletics. It applies to just about everything.
Rich Waltz, you're the best. Thank you for coming on with us. Look forward to seeing you at the conference tournament and beyond.
You got it. I'll see you in Las Vegas. Thanks for the invite.
You bet. All right, Rich Waltz, there he goes. Really good stuff. Obviously, if you're watching college basketball, check that out. Steven, if you can put him back on hold, that'd be great. And we'll be back with more thoughts coming up.